and there's a lot more to go. And one of the things that really interests me was her being treated like a second-class citizen. And we'll be back Friday, September 16th at 9 a.m. here on KBOO 90.7 FM. And there it is.
KBOO Community Radio is hiring. We are seeking a full-time AM News and Public Affairs Director. Applications are due by 4 p.m. Friday, September 2nd, at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Applications may also be emailed. Send them to hiring@kboo.org. To apply, please send both a resume and a cover letter outlining your skills and experience with regard to the minimum qualifications. And please answer the question, why is KBOO important? For more information and a full job description, go to kboo.fm/AM News. KBOO is an equal opportunity and affirmative action employer. Women and people of color are encouraged to apply. Again, that's kboo.fm/AM News. And thank you.
Cascadia. Today is Friday, August 19th, 2016, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM on the air, KBOO.fm on the web. And today's guest, Noel Hanrahan, is going to bring us a direct report from the Prison Radio Project on a development yesterday, this week, the announcement that the U.S. would no longer rely on the prison industrial complex or privatized prisons to incarcerate our thousands upon thousands, our burgeoning prison population that cripples the United States, warehousing people, and then upon their release, preventing them from seeking jobs in the marketplace is a crime. It's an unspeakable crime and has largely gone unspoken. The voice of Mumia Abu-Jamal rings clearly, even from the depths of suffering. And are many, many political prisoners that attempt to speak out. Still, Leonard Peltier is waiting for President Obama to grant him clemency. And if not now, when? And if not who, Obama. It's as simple as that. It's a disgrace. And if it does not happen, it will indeed be a serious, ugly blemish on the president's legacy such as it is. Noel Hanrahan with the Prison Radio Project is waiting patiently on the line. I've got one quick note. We've been following all week, as you no doubt know, if you've been listening, to the Sacred Stone Camp that in North Dakota is protesting the Dakota Access Pipeline. This has turned into a lot more than a protest. It's turned into an enormous convocation. Last report a couple days ago, 5,000 people had come from tribes all across the country. There has never been anything like this gathering of tribes, all of them bringing their stories of their own from their environmental crimes. This is, we're going to use that word is not, in my opinion, used enough. We are not calling a crime when we see it and we know what it is. And people gathering, First Nations people know a crime when they see it because they're living in one as our prisoners. The environmental injustice that has been wreaked upon them is immeasurable. It is past counting. Trillions, in dollar terms, trillions of dollars doesn't begin to touch the damages that have been done to Native people. That said, yesterday, Bismarck, North Dakota, the attempt to build this thing, the Dakota Access Pipeline, which you haven't heard of because the major mainstream media has done such a grand job of suppressing all news coming out of the Dakotas. Well, it's brought protesters, they say, across the country to support the Standing Rock Sioux tribe, with main victims of this pipeline. Most of the protesting was focused near where the pipeline is scheduled to cross the Missouri River near Cannonball. But on Thursday night, protesters took their complaints to the state capitol. Hundreds of protesters, busloads of police officers met at the south entrance of the capitol ground. And the protest organizer says she doesn't expect the blockade, but Bismarck police did help her make sure everybody stayed safe. The only way that you could describe this protest was North Dakota and ICE. In fact, one of the state troopers actually gave his megaphone to one of the protesters. But as the protest did, in fact, go off without incident, and the camp still abides. And we will, first thing next week, be hearing from people who were there at that protest. That said, Paul Manafort has quit. I guess he'll always have a home in Mother Russia, where he has been instrumental in brokering huge deals to the great benefit of Russia, Vladimir Putin, and traced straight back to the coffers of no less than Donald Trump, who only not that long ago was saying, you know, this thing is getting expensive. Funny, doesn't seem that expensive anymore now that Paul Manafort has been playing around in Russian and Ukraine politics. No, it doesn't, does it? Things look a lot different when viewed from the East sometimes. That said, it's indeed time, well past time, to talk with Noel Hanrahan, Prison Radio Project, about this this new piece, this new report, which, as anything with the federal government, we initially have to view with some suspicion before we start celebrating. Noel, thank you so much for being with us today. We're so glad you could join us.
Great. I'm glad to be here.
So the Department of Justice's decision to stop using private prisons, there has one issue that has been brought up is the private prison industry will still have access to its biggest cash cow, immigrants. Thus spake the senior editor at Think Progress. What is in that statement that we need to understand?
I think that everyone needs to understand that this is a total smokescreen. You know, this is public relations at its best. It's a token pseudo-concession. It's not even a concession. They're simply changing the sign on the door from those prisons to FCI whatever.
Thank you. I'm so glad to hear you say this. Indeed.
So it, where everyone's clapping, everyone's celebrating, but it does not change one single thing about the status quo.
That is exactly what my own sense of it was the minute I heard this.
So things you need to know. Most prisons aren't private prisons. Most private prisons aren't federal prisons. This is only the DOJ and federal. Most federal private prisons are run by DHS. This new memo affects exactly 13 prisons. It really is anti-abolitionist. It's co-optation. It's pitiful. It's calculated to make some liberals feel good that they've been placated, but it actually does nothing to address the issue that needs to be addressed. So revolutionary transformation needs to happen. There needs to be as quick a rollback. Last 30 years, we've done this, you know, incarceration Kool-Aid thing. We need to just get, we need to completely redo it, and it needs to be pretty revolutionary. So things like you could think big and you could think really humane, like what's the biggest we can think of? Abolition of prisons.
Yes, that's
20-year maximum sentences, period. Eliminate life sentences. Eliminate bail. You know, yeah. What would Jesus do? Jesus would take those prisons and tear them down brick by brick. So the future is going to involve the abolition of prisons because this culture can't sustain it. So we should be prophetic, and we should start saying what we really need, which is an abolition of this entire system. This tiny little tinkering with the machinery of death is beyond pathetic. It's calculated to pacify, and it is going to do nothing about the problem.
I was very discouraged when I heard it, because the thought of the numbers of people that have been conditioned to take announcements and proclamations like this as, oh, good, you see, you know, the prisons, it's not so bad after all, they're going to abolish these private prisons. The private prison industry, of course, I never thought I would say something like this, but it's certainly been scapegoated. It's certainly been, it's like, oh, well, they're the very bad.
Look,
it's
moving.
Like
not, I mean,
nothing
reacting.
In this makes any sense
so
at all.
They are reacting, which, you know, if you want to take some solace out of it, they're reacting, right? And so it's not like they're giving us anything, but they are reacting, which means that we have their attention. We have to ask for what we really need, not tiny, minuscule, horrible, nothing policy statements. So,
what we just talk about the abolitionist and angle of this whole issue, and that's a good word to use, because I have, in my opinion, and from my observations and reports that I've heard, prisons really are bastions of slavery. I hear the word racism, we're still talking about that, and we talk about it more and more, and we develop new language, new ways of speaking about racism all the time. And we forget that the United States of America has still is one of the last holdouts in the Western world where slavery is actually practiced. We take labor, incarcerated labor, that cannot, people can't go anywhere, have no recourse, and they work for nothing or pennies. Mm-hmm. And there's no other word for it. Before we even begin to think about racism, we might want to begin to address the root of this, and that is slavery as it is practiced in prisons, and then once prisoners are released, as we see it enacted in society on a daily basis in the workplace, and the gates, the very high gates to employment, to the workplace, that are artificially presented to those who are attempting to find their way back into society. I'm not sure if we actually have Noelle on the line at the moment.
Yes, I'm
I hope
here.
That you're there. Good. Sorry, there was a little break in audio here, it seems. So I wanted to ask you a little bit more about that. So it is, in fact, changing nothing, but we have to believe that someone is listening. What, for people who are activists, particularly on this issue, have you got any guidance as to what now that we do have their attention, what would be the first and most important message to try to convey?
You know, I think that everyone has to do what feels really good to them. Like, you're going to be able to be most effective when you do something that you feel really creative about. And almost any issue can be something that has that sort of magic to it. So I would encourage people to do things that they feel really positive about. And to honor, like, the humanity of prisoners. Like, to really put them front and center and to give that respect. So the work that I do, we privilege their voices. We make sure that their voices are heard. But however somebody wants to do that in their own work, like, when we look to make policy changes, it would probably be really important to actually talk to people who have experienced the conditions inside prison. So I'm going to, for my own work, I'm going to go talk to Eddie Marshall Conway, who's in Baltimore, who just got out after 44 years. And he has a lot to say. And I'm going to go sit down with him and kind of interview him. And then I'm also going to go talk to Albert Woodfox, who just got out of Angola Penitentiary. And I want to really just get a sense from them, you know, talk to them about what they think. So I would say privilege the communities that are targeted the most and listen to them.
By all means, invite them to join us on Air Cascadia. And whenever you have an opportunity, listeners, to say,